It's Cofield and Company.
Welcome to the Hotel Hell. Check-in time is now, check-out time is never.
Does my room have cable?
No. And the sheets are made of fire.
Can I change rooms?
Sorry, we're all booked up. Hell convention in town.
With Steve Cofield.
Well, I don't need to shave because it don't grow in right here and right here.
Now you're telling me that you were so ingrained with white trash DNA that your facial hair actually grows in on its own, all white trashy like that?
On ESPN Las Vegas.
Sir, one more outburst, I will strangle you with my microphone wire. You understand me?
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for us.
All right, here we go on this Monday, live on the road for the NCAA title game. It's Cofield and Company. TI, Golden Circle Sports Bar is the location as we're all set for... This is funny. For us, this is cool, but my God, it's a 6:20 tip tonight for the national title game. What's the limit on how late they're going to go for the East Coast people? We're going to have like 10 p.m. Eastern starts for big championship games. It's a 9:20 Eastern time start. So bizarre. And without knowing when they set the schedule, the kind of teams that would be in the title game, I wonder how many people are going to stick around if this thing is what the Vegas books are predicting it to be. And, you know, you can look at KenPom numbers and you look at the scores from the season and you watch the NCAA tournament. What happens, you know, 10:15 Eastern time if we're looking at 26-24 with 18 minutes left in the game? Are East Coast people going to stick around or say the hell with it? This is awful basketball. I think it'll be a good game down the stretch. I don't know what the game is going to be like for the first hour and 40 minutes. If you like defense and these teams play it, they're going to be down with it. But if you are a fan of high-flying dunks and threes, and there may be a few instances of that, but not throughout the game. So Texas Tech and Virginia coming up at 6:20 our time. We have great storylines in this game with Virginia, all the history there, especially recent history, losing to a 16 in round one last year, and now they're in the championship game. And, of course, our former coach here in Las Vegas, Chris Beard. So we'll get to all the breakdown of the game. We'll talk to a couple of legends from Texas Tech and Virginia along the way. So we get you ready down here at the Golden Circle Sports Bar for a 6:20 tip. If you haven't been down here, very cool spot. We'll tell you all about the collectibles that are hung throughout the joint, Phil Ruffin's personal collection, and great bucket specials, pitcher and draft specials as well. So, are you tired of hearing about Chris Beard? Because I'm not. I still think it's a gigantic storyline, and I'll explain later. I guess we have a lot of fans in the market who are just not that passionate, or maybe growing up on the West Coast, Pacific time zone, and growing up in the East is just different. And, hey, maybe you guys are better than us East Coast folks. Because I know me growing up in the East, I celebrate when I do well. I probably lament. And I'm more miserable when we or my team loses. And certain memories of losing or losing out stick with me forever. Hey, you know what? Pacific time zone might be different. It's just that's the way I came up. So for me, Chris Beard will always be a story for UNLV. And if you'd like for it to go away, I suppose Beard and the national media are doing you a favor. If what Chris Beard did to UNLV had happened in a Power 5, and let's not say the Pac-12 because the East Coast and the Midwest media know nothing about the Pac-12. I just saw the two bald guys who do PTI, Wilbon and Kornheiser, legends. I just saw them debating. And listen, a lot of the debate, I put in quotes, is sort of fake on these shows, but they were debating what's the better job, Tennessee or UCLA. Please. There's no debate there. Let's stop. Let's consider where you're living, the talent pool around you that you get to recruit from, the national pool that opens up for you as a coach at UCLA. So that would be a small example. If it was a real debate, that's a ridiculous discussion. What's the better basketball job, UCLA or Tennessee? Give me a freaking break. But because of that, because the Pacific time zone, no matter how big the stories are, the Rams, to me, were undercovered, underexposed all year because they're in L.A. They still don't get the coverage that, think about it. We hear more about the New York Giants throughout the season, a moribund crap franchise stuck in the past, laboring with an owner who is way too involved and way too sympathetic. We hear way more about the New York Giants throughout an NFL season than we did the Rams. We certainly heard nothing, next to nothing, about the LA Chargers. But, you know, you'll get the Steelers stuffed down your throat every freaking minute of every freaking day because of the media bias. And in many ways, the Beard and UNLV story has been really a minor note. If that had happened in the Big East, a coach stays around for less than 20 days and then bolts, says, see ya, to go to Texas Tech. You know how big that story would be? You know how disliked Chris Beard would be, you know, in New York if it were St. John's that he did it to? Or hell, go to some of the newbies, and this is why it's really the Big Catholic, not the Big East, but some of the newbies, like even a Xavier in Cincinnati. You know what a big deal that would have been? 20 days on the job, and he leaves? But as I say all the time, not only are we in the Pacific time zone, but we're essentially in Sports Siberia. Specifically, Vegas is Sports Siberia. Anytime anyone talks about sports outside the market, it's as if we are, you know, 9,000 miles away. Is that how far Siberia is? 9,000 miles away from the East Coast instead of 3,000. So I remember what Chris Beard did. I remember that it's a story. He's the coach of Texas Tech. He's in his third year. This could have been UNLV. He's a great coach. But I'm going to tell you something. And this is why the East Coast media misses out on Pacific time zone stories and hell, even, you know, a place like Lubbock, Texas is, for most of the media power brokers, they have no idea of Lubbock is, what Texas Tech is. Do you realize we are being exposed tonight to the guy that could be, that's not even he could be, he is. Chris Beard is young Bill Belichick on so many fronts. He is. This guy could be one of the all-time winners in the history of college basketball. When we look back 25 or 30 years from now, he could be the Bill Belichick of college basketball. First of all, the obvious, what did Belichick do early in his career? He was handed the New York Jets job. 2 days later, he resigned on a cocktail napkin. I will never forget that day. I know where I was. Again, this might be the East Coast fan in me versus the West Coast fan in a lot of you folks listening. I remember where I was because I was on a trip to New Orleans. I was broadcasting from the House of Blues, and I remember just blowing my freaking top over this guy being handed the Jets job and then resigning on a cocktail napkin 2 days later. I also remember the target of my rant because it actually was not Bill Belichick. So, by the way, you can make the connection, right? Beard, UNLV to Texas Tech. In no time, Belichick, Jets to eventually the Patriots. In no time. But I remember the target of my rant. Adam Hill joins us here, Golden Circle TI. I was just saying, the East Coast media is missing out on so much with Chris Beard. Like, they're getting it, but he was completely undercovered the last 2 years. He's now emerged as the best defensive coach, along with some help, in college basketball. And I think he's Belichick. I think down the road, 25, 30 years from now, this guy is going to be considered next-level genius, next level ruthless, He is Belichick. And I just told the audience, just like Belichick with the Jets on the cocktail napkin, Beard with UNLV, I'm out of here. Better job. I don't like the situation. But I remember that show I did way back when Belichick and the news of the cocktail napkin came out, right? Resignation. I remember the target of my ire was Bill Parcells. Because Bill Parcells, it's just like any parent, right? The child, the mentor, picks up on your values. Bill Belichick is one of these guys who preaches loyalty, dedication, and he's one of the most disloyal coaches in the history of football. He jumped from job to job to job at the end of his career. And in terms of dedication, he got lazier and lazier as he got older. Now, Belichick, that's not the case. Belichick's going to coach until he's 75, and he's a freaking lunatic. But he's certainly not loyal. But you've heard this rant many times before, and people who listen to this show have heard it going back now 20 years. There is a crew that hangs out together, right? That kind of, I'm not going to say hangs out now because they're all 100, right? But they all come, they're buddies, and they're all cut from some kind of the same cloth, and they treat the media the same way. And it's the group of Bill Parcells, Bobby Knight, Tony La Russa, right? So here we go. Parcells to Belichick, Bobby Knight to Chris Beard. Bobby Knight preached loyalty, dedication, discipline. Who's less disciplined in the history of college basketball coaches than Bobby Knight? So Bobby Knight to Chris Beard. Let me give you my other Belichick comparison, and we're going to hit on this a lot in the 4 o'clock hour. We're going to go until 5 o'clock. You're going to find out a little later that behind the scenes, Beard is just like Belichick. Who's Belichick's evil genius in the basement? Who's his Milton from Office Space? Don't take his G-damn stapler or he's going to go crazy. Who is he?
Is it Ernie Adams?
Yes. There is another guy named Adams who is working for Chris Beard that no one knows about. And he is supposed to be the evil genius.
Is it a relative?
I think it's his brother. We're going to find out. I think Ernie Adams' brother is now working with Chris Beard.
Makes sense.
This is unbelievable. It really is. It really is. So we'll get to that in 5 o'clock hour. You like this title game?
I do. I enjoy it. I mean, it's new. It's different. It's very defensive-oriented. But, I mean, I like that. I like new blood. I like new people in there. And, you know, Virginia's a fascinating story. They've been one of the elite teams in college basketball, but everybody just kind of remembers, oh, they lost to a 16 last year. Texas Tech is really new on the national scene, and both teams have somewhat similar styles. I think it's a really fascinating and intriguing matchup, but I also don't think anybody's going to watch.
Oh, I think defense just kills most people.
Yeah.
It's just going to be a lot of griping. Pete Thamel, who writes for Yahoo now, formerly of the New York Times, said, get ready for a meat grinder. Moonlighting is a basketball game. This is a national title game for KenPom disciples. Ding, ding. Adam Hill.
Exactly.
The defensive denizens and hardcore clinicians. You don't understand basketball like we do.
Well, that's true, too. And you'll hear a lot of that from me included and other people who tonight will, when you out there, the average fan, and of course not everybody is the same, but the average fan will be complaining about the lack of offense, too much defense, don't like this style, and all of us college basketball nerds will tell you how you're wrong and you're an idiot because it's actually great. That's what's going to happen tonight. You can already see that.
You're wrong and an idiot, but you're not allowed to have your own opinion on what you like to watch. Pete Thamel also said, not the casual fans who enjoy pace, dunks, and flow. Both teams are ranked among the country's top five in defense. They have the aesthetic appeal of John Daly in a Speedo. Hey, you know what? There are chubby chasers out there. Sure. Some people might like Daly in a Speedo. If you need a refresher, hold a Butler-UConn title game from the horror shelf of your DVD collection. Horror, not whore shelf. And relive that 2011 nightmare. College basketball's shining moment tonight promises to be a tractor pull masquerading as a basketball showcase.
That Butler-UConn game was awesome. What is he talking about? It was right down to the wire.
He doesn't love college basketball like you do,
it's
Adam Hill.
Completely ridiculous.
He doesn't
and by
love
the way,
college basketball.
People, let's also just ignore the fact that Virginia is one of the most efficient offenses that was in the tournament because they don't score a lot because they have long possessions and they grind the other team down defensively. They're a very efficient offense, so stop it.
We've got quick previews today, setting you up for the Vegas Golden Knights in the playoffs. Starts off this Wednesday and then follows up on Friday. But lots on the national title game tonight. You want to come down here, TI, parking is free. They've got great bucket specials, awesome food on this Golden Circle Sports Bar menu. Get on down here to the TI with Cofield and Company.
Follow the Cofield and Company crew around Sin City on Instagram at ESPN Las Vegas. It's Cofield and Company.
Culver got the separation. Oh, big shot. Woo! Stepping up big time. Dagger. Lubbock, Texas right now. What do you think's going on there?
I'm going to get down and get on Buddy Holly Boulevard.
Yeah, they're celebrating in the streets in Lubbock. Wow. Because Texas Tech Monday night will be playing for the national championship.
Jim Nance on the call there. Yep. Vegas dancing in the streets for Chris Beard. Not really. Not really. Although we've been told by some folks who I don't consider passionate fans that they're tired of hearing the story. You'll hear more about it in the 5 o'clock. Check that. 4 o'clock hour. 5 o'clock, we go to the national lead-in to this national title game. 6:20 tip. Isn't this one of those nights you're like, you know what, I'm glad I live on the West Coast. Yeah, there you go. You and your trader coach. Don't be like that. That's the way we are. Some guy walks up with a Texas Tech shirt.
I mean, it is funny. Texas Tech fan comes up and, you know, shouts them out, and we call the coach a traitor, or you did, and he's, you know, gets mad about it.
He didn't get mad. He's just like, don't be
but
playful.
But he very well could leave next week.
Yeah, that's a good point. You'll feel the pain
yeah.
when Texas comes in, and Texas is like, oh, you're making, $270 a year? We'll give you $9.
Or Tennessee.
Or Tennessee could back up the Brinks truck.
Yeah.
This domino stuff can keep happening. Obviously, Rick Barnes is going to make a decision here, you would think, soon on UCLA. And Reno felt the pain over the weekend with Eric Musselman bolting for Arkansas. We'll get to it in a little bit. So we got a 6:20 tip tonight. Come on down here, Golden Circle Sports Bar at the TI to watch the national championship between Texas Tech and Virginia. So in our neck of the woods, Wednesday is the beginning of the VGK drive for another Stanley Cup appearance. Maybe finish it off this time. Win the Stanley Cup title. But if I told you, without following teams closely, that one team in this series against the Sharks lost 7 of 8 going into the playoffs. Down the stretch, they were 16-17-3. On the other side, the Sharks lost 9 of 12, and they finished the season 12-11-2. How the hell do you make a choice? Who is suddenly going to go, you know what, now it's time. Flip the switch, we're ready.
Well, it's interesting enough that both teams are in similar situations in that they essentially knew where they were a long time ago. And the Sharks were still kind of fighting for first place, but it looked like this series was locked in for quite some time. And both had a lot of injuries down the stretch. Not real severe ones in the Knights' case, and it was a much more severe one for the Sharks. But both teams had to try to get healthy, had to try to balance, kind of playing out the string with trying to get guys healthy. And now they're in a position to both say, hey, let's go, let's play. Now the games matter, and let's try to turn it up. So it's certainly comes down to whichever team can just flip a switch and say, hey, it's playoff time, let's go. But I have been making the case with, you know, the couple interviews that I've done on this that most of the players in this series are largely irrelevant. If you look at most guys on the ice, they're not really going to matter. I think the Sharks are better at almost every position. And it all comes down to Martin Jones, the goaltender for San Jose. If he can be even okay, the Sharks win the series. But there's been a lot of times this year where he hasn't even been okay. And there's been a lot of times against the Knights that he hasn't made it through the game. 13 starts against the Golden Knights in the last two seasons. People keep saying he's been pulled 5 times. I think it's 4. Either way, that is way too many. Way too many times he's been pulled from a game for being ineffective against the Knights and just been shelled against them. And he needs to be good. Now, maybe not even good. He needs to be at least serviceable. If you listen to the Sharks side, they are not worried about it. You know, Martin Jones did have a great run in the 2016 playoffs, took him to a Stanley Cup final. He was really good. 3 shutouts, 2.16 goals against average. He was solid. This year, His save percentage is under 90%. He's at .896. That's not good. That's not going to get the job done. And he again was shelled by the Knights a couple of weeks ago. So there's a lot of concern in Sharkland about how Martin Jones is going to play. On the other side, you know, Marc-Andre Fleury is out a few weeks. He's given up 4 goals in each of his 2 starts since he returned. But I don't think there's a whole lot of concern that he can, you know, round into form and be sharp. There is some question marks on the other side. Now, Pete DeBoer said today, the coach of the San Jose, he said, you guys keep throwing all these stats at me about how much Martin Jones is struggling. Here's an analytic for you. If you ask around our room, there is 1,000% confidence in Martin Jones.
That's not an analytic.
I know. I think that was the. Yeah. I think that was his point. But yeah.
Did you follow up with that? Hey, Pete. That's not technically an analytic. Oh, sorry, man.
I wasn't there in San Jose, so I'm not sure. But I think that's kind of what he was getting at. And I actually think he was aiming that at our old friend Sheng Peng.
Science! The
analytics guy up there.
So he's already making waves in San Jose?
Oh, that happened a long time ago.
That's awesome. More on the Golden Knights in the 4 o'clock hour during the Big 5 at 4. On the way back, though, we're going to talk about the title game tonight. Also, the lead-up. Boy, that was a wacky weekend with Virginia and Auburn is a CBS broadcaster and actually a guy who played at Virginia. Dan Bonner is up next.
Cofield and Company will be back in 90 seconds. Keep it here on ESPN Las Vegas. It's Cofield and Company.
So here we go. Jerome to inbound.
Well, they got the lob.
Looking. It's Guy from the corner. For the win. Yeah. Hold on. Hold on. Did I hear a whistle?
Wow.
We got a foul call.
Wow.
The Auburn fans thought it was over, but there was a whistle. Guy will be at the line for 3. He's tied it.
Wow. This is unbelievable.
For the lead. He got all 3.
Udgets.
Here it is. Brown turns around. It's off the mark. Virginia is heading to its first ever national championship game appearance.
The ball is tipped.
Oh, really? Already? I thought we only used one shining moment to mock on teams.
I think we are.
Are we?
Auburn.
Oh, we're mocking on Auburn? Okay. Well, that was an interesting game, no doubt, down the stretch with the officials. Both were defensive battles, and we're set for a defensive battle tonight. It's Steve and Adam out here in Vegas, ESPN Las Vegas. Dan Bonner has been all over college basketball for, we'll say, a long time. We don't want to make him sound old, but he's still sharp as a tack. And Dan is on the horn with us here on this Monday before the title game. How are you?
I'm fine, guys. How's everything tonight?
We're good. I'm catching my breath. We're looking forward to the title game tonight, but we want to look back on that game in particular. You heard the foul and the 3 free throws by Kyle Guy. I assume, like most, you were cool with that call on Auburn?
Well, there's no question about it. In fact, if you look back on what the NCAA has emphasized all year long, that foul in particular, I actually put out a weekly video. It was on YouTube. Anybody can watch it. But it was called the Weekly Whistle, where they talked about rules interpretations and calls that they wanted made. And their Weekly Whistle number 11 from January the 24th was that specific play. And so when an official, particularly one who's been selected to the NCAA tournament based on the fact that he makes the calls the NCAA wants him to make, sees that play right in front of him, he's going to blow the whistle. And I thought, appropriately so. You can't have the game end when some guy pushes a shooter from underneath.
What did you think happened on the missed double dribble?
Well, you know, that's very interesting because when I watched that play live, and I thought Gene Steratore, who was there, he said when he watched the play live, he didn't pick up on the double dribble because he, like me, thought the defender hit the ball. And if you're the referee in that situation and you think there's any possibility at all that the defender touched that ball, then you can't blow the whistle. What I will say, though, is I thought that Auburn defender made the play that won them the game because he's trying to foul, but he's going for the ball instead of just grabbing and knock the ball away. And I thought, wow, you know, that Virginia doesn't have enough time. And then he turned around and he fouled him. If he doesn't foul him, then Virginia has no choice but to, you know, lob one up from beyond half court. But by fouling him, you allowed Virginia to run that inbounds play that resulted in Kyle Guy getting to the free throw line.
It's a subtle thing just to ask the question, though, because I get so angry watching games. When teams are trying to foul late, do you ever get as angry as I do that they're not trying to get the ball? You have an opportunity to go for a free steal.
No, you're absolutely right, and that's the way teams should be fouling. But I'll tell you what, I don't think teams practice that. When you're trying to foul at the end of the game, when you have fouls to give, you should be very aggressive going after the basketball. And I thought that's what the guy from Auburn was doing, but turned out not to be so.
So on the case of Virginia, I find it incredibly fascinating, certainly what happened last year and now the run they're on this year. What do you think it is about this team's makeup that enabled them to get over that and to push forward? We saw a little bit of a hangover maybe in that first game where they were kind of thinking about it a little too much, but now this great run to kind of atone for last year.
I cannot imagine. I can't even begin to think about the pressure that was on them in that first game, particularly after they fell behind by 14 points. But I just think the composure that their coach showed and the composure that they all showed after that loss last year, you listened to what Tony Bennett said, you listened to what those players said, and you thought, wow, these guys really have it together. Now, of course, that was for the cameras, but they did. They've said all year they haven't tried to run away from it. They've tried to say, okay, this happened. We can't change it, but we can move on. And I just think that their composure has been the biggest factor.
So what is going to be their key tonight? We know what they do defensively. We know their offense is very underrated because it's very efficient, even though they don't score a lot of points. But Texas Tech certainly has been a hot team in this tournament, has done a lot of the same things that Virginia has done. What is the key for Virginia tonight?
Well, let's think about this. Texas Tech, according to the metrics, their opponents in this tournament are averaging 0.84 points per game or points per possession against them. So if Virginia has 60 possessions, and that's about what they average, and they only score 0.84 points, then they score about 50 points. And they're going to need more than that to win. But Virginia, according to the metrics, all season long, their offensive efficiency has been 1.22 points per possession, which if they have 60 possessions, they will score 73 or thereabouts. And I think that the key for Virginia tonight is they've got to be much closer to 73 than they are to 50. Their defense, as Texas Tech's defense does for them, keeps them in the game. But if you're going to win a game like this, you got to put the ball in the basket.
Dan Bonner's with us, longtime announcer of college basketball. You heard him during the tournament this year, working with CBS. So we're looking at a playing career that goes back over 45 years, a announcing career that goes back over, 33, 34 years. Before this, because I'm going to draw the ties here to Chris Beard, who in your mind is the best defensive coach in the history of college basketball that you've seen?
Wow, in the history of college basketball?
Well, we'll say over the last 40 years. Who, when you saw a guy, you consistently said to yourself, you know what, they have the best defense year in and year out.
Well, I think you have to start on that list with a guy like Tony Bennett. I mean, that's fairly current, but if you look at what his teams have done at Washington State and at Virginia, then he's on the list. Dick Bennett, his dad, certainly has to be on the list. I would think Bob Knight certainly has to be on the list, particularly with his time at Indiana. And even though it's not a man-to-man thing, I think you have to say that Jim Boeheim's concepts at Syracuse have been very, very good, even though they play the zone. And Chris Beard, with the way they play, if they can continue to do that on a regular basis, they've done it for a couple of years now, if they can continue to do that year in and year out, then you certainly have to put him on the list. But in the last 2 years, he may be at the top of the list.
Yeah, he has a chance to be one of the all-time greats very, very early on. Well, speaking of all-time greats, I think it's safe in saying, hey, this Virginia team is very good. This run that Bennett has had is very good. This is not the best team, though, in Virginia history, right? Is it pretty clear that it was Sampson's teams that were the best teams, even though right after Ralph Sampson left, they made the Final Four? Is that the best era in Virginia basketball history?
I certainly think so. I think this era with Tony Bennett over the last few years has rivaled that. And, you know, maybe now it's exceeded that, and it certainly will exceed it if they win the game tonight. But the thing you have to understand about the Ralph Sampson era, it came right on the heels of relatively tough times for Virginia. Virginia really wasn't competitive at all in basketball until the early 70s when a guy named Barry Parkhill got things rolling and then tailed off a little bit until Terry Holland showed up and they won an ACC tournament championship in 1976, and then getting Ralph Sampson in there really helped elevate them. But I think that if Tony Bennett's team wins the title tonight, then you got to look at this last 5 or 6 years with Tony Bennett as the golden age of Virginia basketball. But I think right at the moment I'm sticking with Ralph Sampson in the late 70s and early 80s.
Refresh our memory. With all the schools that wanted Ralph Sampson, how did Virginia land Ralph Sampson?
Well, you have to remember that Ralph Sampson's a local kid. He's from Harrisonburg, Virginia, which is, you know, less than an hour away from Charlottesville. And, I don't know. Terry Holland recruited him, and Terry Holland is a great salesman and a great recruiter. And I know one of the things they did when Sampson made his visit, somebody climbed up on the roof of their arena, University Hall at the time, and wrote Ralph's house. And maybe that impressed him. I don't know.
That works. The other amazing thing about the Sampson era, you know, they had a really good run in the ACC, but at the time the ACC was so ridiculous that they had great competition around the ACC.
Well, that's the era in the ACC of Michael Jordan, of James Worthy, of Sam Perkins. I mean, it was a great ACC. Of course, Duke was at their low point. That was early in Krzyzewski's career, but Wake Forest had outstanding teams, and North Carolina State. Of course, they won the championship in 1983, Ralph's last year. So there were great teams and great players in the ACC, which didn't have 37 teams in the league like it does now.
Right.
They had eight. And so that meant everybody played everybody else twice, and it was just a different era, of course, in college basketball.
Dan Bonner's with us. Does this matchup signal to you that we're moving into a new era of college basketball, or is it just a one-off where we're going to have, I'm not going to say nameless, faceless offenses and great defenses moving forward, but there's some people out there who fear once the one and done is gone, you know, say the top 20 players are gone each year from the incoming recruiting class, that things are going to become more vanilla. Are we headed towards more of a defensive era in college basketball?
Well, maybe we are, and the only reason I say that is because teams copy success. We had a very physical era in college basketball in the 80s after the success of John Thompson's Georgetown teams that beat the snot out of everybody and won the national championship, so suddenly that became the way to play. I think that the thing that has affected college basketball more than anything else now is the three-point shot, and everybody wants to be the Warriors. And so I think that people are going to take a much harder look at defensive play, and particularly if you lose the 20 elite players who might be one-and-done guys, then maybe you have to do it a little bit different way. But I don't really see things changing a great deal. I'm not sure that this is a one-off, because Tony Bennett's teams have been there year in and year out, but and it's hard to teach people to play defense. It's hard to get guys to be interested in playing defense. So I'm not sure that this is any this signals any great change.
This is a weird one. Is Texas Tech, if it does win a national title, going to be able to hold on to Chris Beard with some really big money suitors out there?
Well, you know, it strikes me that Texas Tech, they're not poverty-stricken.
Right.
They're not some Division III program. They're in a major conference, the Big 12, and Chris Beard, remember, that's where he wanted to go. He was an assistant for 10 years at Texas Tech, and I'm not sure that you could lure him away from Texas Tech after they gave him, you know, the opportunity he was looking for. He got hired at Las Vegas, and what, he was there 5 minutes before he went to Texas Tech. So Texas Tech is where he wants to be, so I think you would have to throw an awful lot of money at him, and I don't know him, but I'm not sure he's the kind of guy who's all about money, because it's not like he's working for minimum wage at Texas Tech.
Yeah. Last one for Dan Bonner. We have a lot of L.A. transplants, a ton here in Las Vegas, a lot of UCLA people. Should Rick Barnes take the UCLA gig? Is that a better gig than Tennessee and the SEC?
I don't think so. I think the one thing, if you can get UCLA to, you know, and I'm not sure you guys would know better, but they don't even charter flights. Their facilities are bad. Why would you? And everybody thinks you ought to win the national championship every year, even though they haven't done it for, what, their last one was in Jim Herrick 1995? So I'm not sure that that's a great job. Tennessee job, I think, is a great job. The fans are excited. They have great facilities. The only problem you have in the SEC is there's a team called Kentucky in the SEC, and that makes it hard.
So what's your pick for the game tonight?
Well, I think that Texas Tech has been the best team in the tournament so far, but I think Virginia has a little bit more potential, so mainly because it's important to my family bracket. I'm going to go with Virginia.
Why don't they have you courtside, standing there, you know, sweating like Barkley? What's going on here?
I don't have the cachet that Charles does.
I guess not. All right, Dan. Hey, we appreciate it. Good luck to your Cavaliers, and thanks for the time on this title day.
All right, thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
There you go. Dan Bonner, who, if you grew up in the 80s like I did and got to watch all that ACC basketball, and especially ACC, but the heyday of the Big East, you know Dan Bonner's voice. He was all over those games. And it is pretty amazing that looking back with Ralph Sampson, Virginia could never win a national title. But then you look at the teams. They did lose 1 year to a UAB team that was not a great loss. But you look at the other teams, you know, around the college basketball landscape from 79 to 82, and you're like, my God, this era was ridiculous.
Well, that mighty Chaminade team.
Yeah, that too. We didn't slip that in there.
Yeah.
Isn't that crazy? I wonder, did anyone ever crunch the numbers? What was a more shocking loss for Virginia? Was it Chaminade in Maui, or was it UMBC last year, 116?
Oh, I think it's Chaminade.
Yeah.
I think it definitely is. Yeah. I mean, in the end, UMBC had made a run in their conference, and, you know, they were playing well at the time, but still, it's got to Chaminade is the one.
On the way back, we do have a Big 5 at 4 today because we're going to go to the national coverage at 5 o'clock, but we actually want to get into WrestleMania, and I heard a lot of people were pissed off at the end of, what was it, a triple-headed match with Rousey and Flair and that, what's her name, Becky! I think someone broke their hand, too.
Cofield and Company returns in minutes on ESPN Las Vegas. It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
I then realized in that moment that I had never once thought to ask Jim about any of this.
Rolling back here, getting ready for the title game. Watching it at Golden Circle Sports Bar inside the TI. It's Angel. It's Cofield. It's Adam Hill. Chrissy back in our Finley Toyota Studios. What was that? WrestleMania?
That was a 61-year-old Bret Hart who has had many health problems.
Oh.
Giving a speech and being attacked somehow on stage, which was ridiculous. Wrestling fans are just out of control.
Wait, was that WrestleMania or Hall of Fame night?
It was a Hall of Fame night.
So then I thought I saw him, the guy being dragged out, and then someone just gave him a right to the face, and he dropped to the ground.
They beat the snot out of him.
He was being pulled out by like eight guys, and the guy in front just like, ooh, with an uppercut right, and he went down.
Including Travis Brown.
He was working security.
Well, he was like up there.
Really?
Yeah.
Did he get a shot in?
It looked like it.
Did he drop in like one of those side elbows that he likes to do when a guy's down low near his hip?
I didn't see the specific shots he got in, but it looked like he was part of the crew there.
I will remember, I promise. Wednesday, we need to roll this back for Justin Watkins. I wonder what the legal issues are when you're dragging someone out and they're not fighting it. Are you allowed to just start punching him in the face? Like, could that guy flip it around and go, yeah, I ran on the stage. I didn't know what was going on. I got dragged out, but in no way did I deserve. I wasn't resisting. Why did I get punched in the face?
I think because he was the aggressor. And once you're the aggressor, I think until the threat is completely, I mean, it was ridiculous.
Law enforcement? Are you talking law enforcement rules or security?
I'm just saying regular people that are there. If you're seeing an old man being attacked, I think you have every right you want to just beat him down.
I don't feel like Bret Hart is that much older than I am.
He's 61.
He's not that much older than
I am. He's been through a lot of health issues, too.
All right. I stand up for those punched in the face every once in a while.
Okay.
I've been there.
You probably deserved it.
What was that? What happened at the end with Rousey and Flair and Lynch? And I guess it was Lynch and Rousey. Did they try to end it early? That couldn't have been part of the script. Rousey is down on her back. She's bridging. Her shoulders aren't down. I am a technical nuts when it comes to the rules of pro wrestling.
Poor officiating.
That was not a pin.
Well, listen.
This is outrageous.
I haven't watched in a while, but I will say even when I was watching when I was younger, one of the real issues in professional wrestling has always been questionable officiating.
Yes.
A lot of times the guys just turn their back. Sometimes they get hit with a chair and they don't do anything.
Weren't there like two Heppners? Wasn't it Dave Heppner?
Earl Heppner?
Earl Heppner and Dave. And I think they used to like switch out, kind of like the Martin twins did all over Reno.
Okay.
I don't know if the Martin twins did.
I don't know if they did either.
Earl. Oh, it's Heppner, H-E-B.
I remember
it
Earl
It appears
Heppner.
They actually are twins.
Okay.
Or they're just brothers who look a lot alike. But, yeah, Dave and Earl Heppner.
Well, that sets up a lot of good storylines where, you know, you can have the wrong guy officiating and one guy be evil and switch out and be good. There's plenty you could do with that. But, yeah, I think it has plagued. We talk a lot about the missed double dribble, but the, you know, poor officiating has plagued wrestling for a long time and certainly struck again yesterday as it seemed. Like you said, I don't know if Rondo was supposed to get out of it and the referee counted too quickly or she wasn't supposed to get out of it and she accidentally did. Becky Lynch had her in a crucifix.
Or she refused to go with the fake storyline. Rhonda is a winner.
She'd agreed to that a long time ago.
She'd agree to what? Lose?
To get pinned. Yeah.
To get pinned? In this spot?
Yeah.
You know you could bet that. You could bet if she was leaving after the WrestleMania.
Oh, really?
Yeah, offshore.
Mm. Should have done that.
But she apparently broke her hand. I think it was Meltzer. Dave Meltzer said, broken hand, pretty serious. That's not fake, right?
Usually he has real information.
Right.
I never know what's fake and what's not and what gets out, why it doesn't. I don't understand it. And so, I don't know. I don't know what they're doing in wrestling.
So you know not along that she was supposed to leave after this to go have kids?
Oh, I didn't find out until like the other day. But, yeah, I mean, it's been supposedly been in the works for a long time.
A Mark Normandin said, Ronda Rousey's pre-mania build being, quote, wrestling is fake, followed by Ronda breaking her hand during the biggest match she's been in is something. Suggesting, hey, see? It's not fake. Broke her hand.
I mean, that's fine. And by the way, it is. I don't understand the wrestling people's anger when you call it fake. Like, yeah, it's stunt work. Like, yeah, you could get her doing stunt work.
Mm-hmm.
That stunt work is real, but it's scripted, and you know what's going to happen, and these outcomes are scripted. Like it's not real.
Have you reported officially that Brock Lesnar is back? He lost to something called Seth Rollins.
That guy still – God, it, you know what's amazing to me when every year when, like, wrestling comes around, and I know it's always out, but, you know, once a year you hear about wrestling because of WrestleMania, and then I'm always, like, shocked that some of these people are like, oh, that guy's still there? That guy still does it? But, yeah, I guess Seth Rollins still around and got the win. And I think it certainly sets up Brock Lesnar to be able to come back to the UFC if he wants to. Word is he will be back late this year, but he still does have a brief suspension to fulfill and then testing to start for at least 6 months. So it could happen late this year, and that opens the door for it. I don't know that it's guaranteed or official. He was supposed to come back last year, and then he didn't. They fully expected him back last year.
We discussed last week a lot of racial and gender equity issues. Did you feel like there was a big step taken forward with Kofi Kingston, African-American, winning the WWE Championship? Ryan McKinnell was all over it. He thought it was a watershed moment.
It's great, I guess. And I'll qualify it by saying, how on earth did this not happen before? Like, what are they doing?
It's happened 4 times in, like, 1,000 years of WWE.
Wait, it has?
Yeah.
I saw the tweet last night that said he was the first.
No. He's the first in a long time. He's the fourth overall.
Okay. Well, that's our change.
I'd have to look back at history.
Twitter was kind of going nuts on that last night that it was the first one. And so, again, I was stunned by that. I thought there's no way that's true. But I guess, you know, it's cool. It's a good thing for for the WWE to finally be making some progress. They made some progress with, you know, gender issues as well by having a female main event. And I think the best part of them having a female main event and being a good moment is that it wasn't some, you know, gift to them. Like, they had earned it.
I'm trying to check on the facts of this. It says Kofi Kingston is the second black WWE champion. He's the fourth black wrestler to win a heavyweight championship. I don't know. This is so confusing.
You have no idea what's going on. I don't mean you. I mean nobody on Twitter does. It was crazy last night with all this stuff. But
I thought Tony Atlas won the Intercontinental back in.
Well, Coco Beware was the Intercontinental champion.
That's in a different belt. So I don't know. We're confused. is Cormier going to get Lesnar? Will the UFC do what's right or do what's right for their pockets?
And make it Jon Jones?
Yes. I got to tell you, for storyline, I really want it to be Jon Jones because I will enjoy the ranting and raving that they completely screwed over Cormier out of a big money fight against Lesnar.
It
should go to Cormier, but the bigger money fight is Jon Jones.
But will
Although you pointed out that they'd at least have a chance to do Jones and Lesnar down the road because maybe Cormier wouldn't destroy Brock Lesnar, so he'd still have a little bit of breath left as an MMA fighter.
Maybe. I, who knows?
But if they do it the other way, Jones will just annihilate him, and then that's also it.
They would have Jones, Lesnar for non-title.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't make any sense, really. And Cormier has absolutely earned that. They need to give Cormier.
Earned it how? He hasn't been suspended. Yeah. He's not infamous. There's no roids in his past. There's no fornicating. There's no arrests. There's no hit and runs. He's done nothing to earn that fight.
They need to give Cormier that fight.
4 o'clock hours on the way. Early Big Five today as we get you ready for the title game. Tip is at 6:20, but pregame nationally goes down here on ESPN Las Vegas at 5:00.